As I said in my emails last week, I'm sorry, this week, in my email last night and my email today, what we really discussed last week was the significance of burial. We didn't discuss the reason as to why burial is the preferred method of interring a one who passes away. What we did talk about, though, is just how significant it is in Judaism, the disproportionate focus that the Torah has on burial, and so many other things along those lines, the ramifications in Jewish law when one doesn't go through a burial. But what we haven't discussed yet are the whys. Why is it that burial is so important? Why is it that Judaism even has a preference one way or the other when it comes to what to do with a dead body? So that's what I want to talk about tonight. Again, I did send out the recording of last week's class, so please feel free to listen to that if you haven't yet, especially if you weren't able to attend last week. And you'll see how the two are these two classes are very much connected. Okay, so let's begin. So firstly, why do we take burial so seriously? So I think the first very clear answer is that the Torah clearly tells us that that we need to bury our dead, that we're not allowed to do anything else with our dead other than burying them. And in fact, that's a verse in last week's Torah portion. It's actually shared in the context of somebody who received a capital punishment, somebody who was killed by the Jewish court. So in other words, what the method that the Torah is using is that if this person is treated in this way, then all the more so anybody else should be treated in at least as respectful of a way. And the Torah tells us that it is absolutely upon us, the community, the Beit Din, the Jewish court that puts somebody to death, that they must bury that person right away. So number one, they must be buried. And number two, it must happen right away. And from there, we get a very clear Torah source for this idea of burial being the only method of dealing with a dead body in Judaism. And number two, that it has to happen right away. I do want to point out that the reason it has to happen right away is because of what's known as kavod hamet, which means respect or honoring the dead, which means, therefore, that if it all has to do with honoring the dead, then, for instance, if somebody's family member, if somebody passes away and their family member lives 2 days' trip away, then it's completely appropriate to wait 2 days before the burial, because having that person at the funeral will create an honor for this person that has passed away. Or, for instance, if more people will be able to be at the funeral if you wait a day, for instance, then again, absolutely, you can push off for that day, because having a lot of people at a funeral is a way to show honor before COVID. So we have a very clear verse in last week's Torah portion that tells us this. And in fact, last week's Torah portion would even speaks to the idea of, for instance, someone being cremated and then being buried, right? Their ashes being buried. Why isn't that enough? Doesn't it just say they have to be buried? So if you a clear and precise look at the words of the verse tells us that the person needs to be buried. The entirety of the person needs to be buried. And obviously, when someone is first cremated, that what's being buried is ashes. It's not the entirety of the person. So the Torah very clearly tells us this. So I think that's, you know, when we talk about why is this so important? Well, the Torah tells us, Judaism's right source text tells us that burial is the only way, and that it has to be done with a sense of urgency. Now, the question, though, is why? Why do we care so much? Why does Judaism care so much about what happens to the body? Isn't a body, once it's dead, isn't it just flesh and bones, right? There's no soul. The whole part of the body that animates, that gives us any sort of significance, would seemingly be the soul. And once the soul leaves, once that body is gone, wouldn't we think that then you can do whatever you want with the body, right? It's why do we look at it with such significance? Why do we care what we do with it? So I think the first idea, which is a rather simple idea, very good. Thank you for bringing that up. Sandra brought up the question, what about organ donation? The whole body is not going to be buried whole, right? Because you're missing a heart, or you're missing a you know, some other part of your body. How does that work? So the answer to, and Sandra, that question, as I've shared before, has been the source of a certain misconception in the Jewish community for a very long time. Many Jews thought that we weren't allowed to do organ donation because you're not allowed to tamper with the body after death. You can't, you have to bury it whole. And we'll even talk about a little bit more of an argument that was used against it. But do not forget, we should never, ever forget that there is one mitzvah that trumps all of the other ones, and that is to save a life. So much more important to save a life than to ensure that a body is buried whole. So of course, if you can save a life by taking somebody's heart and having them buried without a heart, that is absolutely the right thing to do. That's the encouraged thing to do. It'd be wrong not to do that. And the most amazing thing about it is that it's an ability for a dead person, for somebody to do a huge mitzvah even after they have died, which is not something that dead people usually get to do. So thank you for bringing that up, Sandra. It definitely does connect with this discussion. So the first very simple idea is that the human body doesn't belong to us. It belongs to our creator, right? It's merely on loan to us. We become the guardian, and therefore we're not allowed to deface it in any way. And the body has to be returned entirely to its source, just as it was given. And obviously if you cremate the body, then it's not being returned as it was given. By the way, this very simplistic idea of the body being on loan from our creator also is one of the reasons given for why we're not allowed to self-mutilate or give ourselves a tattoo. Why we generally do not permit autopsies unless there's an extenuating circumstance. It's also why the Torah tells us very clearly about maintaining proper hygiene. This idea of the body being on loan, and therefore we're the guardians, the protectors of it, and need to return it to the best of our abilities whole to our creator, forms the basis for so many of these different ideas that I just shared, including, as I said, autopsies, other than in extenuating circumstances. So I think that's the first very more simplistic idea. And along those lines, we also have this concept of God, of man or humankind, being created in God's image, which is a very clear verse in Genesis. And any violation of the human body would therefore be considered a violation of God, because we are created in God's image. So those are the more simplistic ideas, that even when I say the word simplistic, it just means we're not getting into anything very, you know, extremely mystical or Kabbalistic, but instead just very simple. This isn't our body. God tells us to do something with it. God, you know, we're meant to protect it. We're meant to guard it, and we have to return it whole, to the best of our abilities. We're created in God's image, and anything that we would do to violate it would be considered a violation of God. But now let's go a little bit further. Let's talk a little bit deeper. Let's talk about what a body, how Judaism sees the body. And I want to share that the way Judaism sees the body is actually quite different than the other Abrahamic faiths. Judaism sees the body as something holy, and not just something holy. In fact, the Zohar, that foundational work of the Kabbalah of Jewish mysticism, tells us that the body possesses an even deeper spirituality than the soul itself. And what's the reason for this? Why would we say the body possesses an even deeper spirituality than the soul itself? And the idea is that the entire purpose, one of the ways of looking at the purpose of creation of humankind, is for us to uplift the physical. In other words, we have this concrete physical world around us, and we're put into this world to elevate every physical part of this world, to kind of take out those spiritual sparks of each and everything we see and elevate it, thereby making this physical world into a dwelling place for God. That would be the way to put it. And if we look at it that way, then the soul is very important, right? The soul perhaps animates our body. gives our body, you know, a certain drive, a certain way of looking at things, a certain perspective. But ultimately, if we're talking about the purpose of creation, you know, where the deepest spirituality is found, it's in the physical being transformed or being elevated. And what is more physical than our bodies itself? And therefore, when our bodies engage in holiness, elevated things, our bodies become elevated and become the greatest source, the greatest vessel of spirituality that exists in the world. And we believe that the body is sacred even once somebody has died. There's no reason, if the body is sacred on its own without the soul, then there's no reason to say that that sacredness, that that significance, that holiness, that spirituality has left just because the soul has left, just because the person has died. And therefore, when we're talking about a holy object, when we're talking about something of great great spirituality, then we need to treat that in a very specific way, and to go and burn this holy object instead of very gently placing it back so that it can return to its source, right? From dust you come and from dust you shall return, would be a massive violation. Perhaps I want to share a couple of other ways of putting this, taking a look at the relationship between the body and soul, because I think that, you know, each of these are a bit of a play off of a very similar concept. So I want to talk a little bit about that. Secondly, besides for the Zohar, which tells us that the body can perhaps has an even greater spirituality than the soul itself, it also is important to remember that the body is the vehicle with which we serve God through our lives. And anything in this world that has been used for a mitzvah, has been used to serve God, has a certain level of holiness. And then the only thing we're allowed to do with it when we want to discard it is bury it, right? So a notice went out recently about the yearly geniza, the yearly shemus, the yearly burial of sacred objects. That's because those are things that we've done mitzvot with. They have been the vessels that we have used to serve God. And the only way we will dispose of such holy objects is by burying it. And so too, of course, would go for our body. So that's one way of looking at it. The second way of looking at it talks more or focuses more on the very specific relationship that exists between this body and the soul. What I want to share now is from a great sage that we know as the Malbim, which is an acronym for the name Mer Labish, the son of Yechiel Michel. Okay, that's where the word Malbim comes from. He was born in the early 1800s and died in the later 1800s. And he was a rabbi and a real expert in Hebrew grammar and a Bible commentary, one of the most important Bible commentaries we have. And he explains that the soul and the body basically become, quote unquote, partners in crime as they journey through life together. And what ends up happening is the soul, upon the death of the body, when the body, you know, upon somebody's death, the soul, it's a gradual process for the soul to kind of disengage from the body. And it's only as the body slowly decomposes, does the soul become free to return to its heavenly home. And that separation, if not done gradually, can be very, very painful. And on the other hand, if that decomposition doesn't happen, then the soul will be attached to the body for a very, very long time until the decomposition does happen. By the way, that's the reason why in Judaism we're not allowed to embalm. Embalming keeps the body intact. And the reason that that would be a problem is because the soul, in order for it to disengage from the body in a more peaceful and gentle way, the only way for that to happen is when as the soul sees that the body is slowly is decomposing, can the soul then disattach? But if the body's not decomposing, then the soul stays attached to the body, not making the journey to its ultimate source, you know, to its heavenly home. So these are very like spiritual terms, but these are the terms that are used, that the Malbim shares with us, that are spoken about a lot in Kabbalah and Jewish mysticism. And this is why, by the way, and this is why cremation would be something that would be extremely painful, because it is a slow and gradual process. The soul is deeply in tune to what's going on with the body, and it's only as it sees the body decomposing that it slowly feels can slowly peacefully return to its heavenly home. So cremation, which is a complete destruction of the body, that's immediate. But what we have there is an extremely painful, shocking, jarring process for the soul, needing to disengage far before it's ready, completely not being able to go on this more peaceful and step-by-step process towards its heavenly home. And what you end up doing, according to this concept, through cremation, you end up bringing your soul this unnecessary, deep, deep pain and shock. That would be perhaps the way to do it. In Jewish mysticism, the body and the soul in that relationship is compared to a loving husband and wife. And when, for instance, when one spouse, so when a husband departs from the world, a wife or the other spouse cannot immediately move on, right? The bond is so close that time's needed to adjust to the new reality. And exactly the same thing, the soul and the body, like husband and wife, when the body dies, the soul can't just abandon the spouse so quickly. There's a sense of confusion, disorientation, and it stays close to what it knows best, unless it can go through this slow process as the body begins to decompose. So that's just another way to put this similar type of an idea. And again, an abrupt departure would be intensely painful for the soul. And that's one way of sharing this idea of why cremation is looked on so negatively, based on the relationship between the body and the soul. Another way to put it, is that the soul is deeply aware of what happens to the body, and if a soul is to become aware that the body, its partner, was just burnt, you know, was just immediately destroyed, that would cause deep pain. So this is less about the adjustment to a new reality and an abrupt adjustment versus a very peaceful and gradual one. This is what this is referring to, is that the soul and body are deeply aware of each other. And it brings comfort to the soul to know that the body is being treated gently and it's being taken care of by the Chevra Kadisha and is given the purification known as the Tahara. And it's gently put into the ground and it's allowed to return to its source. And it would bring the soul great pain if, in fact, it became aware, which it would, of a cremation, of just the complete destruction of the body, complete burning of the body. That would be another way to put it. The last way to put this type of idea that looks at the relationship between the body and the soul is saying it like this. There was once somebody who was dying, and this man said that he wants to be cremated. And he shared his wishes with his son. And the son, who was a little bit more traditional than his dad, went to his rabbi and said, "What can I say to convince my father not to be cremated?" And the rabbi wasn't really sure what to say. So he wrote a letter to the Lubavitcher Rebbe. The Rebbe shared a very long response in Hebrew, long, long response. But I want to share a couple of lines right now that I think really kind of put, you know, is really like the crux of what the Rebbe was explaining. He said that the body exists for a very long time after death, right? Obviously, a body doesn't decompose right away. It has a certain life to it until it has completely decomposed, right? The soul only completely leaves the body And this gets into some Kabbalistic concepts of different levels of the soul and how the ascent of the soul happens gradually, and how the last layer of the soul of the human being doesn't leave the body until the body has decomposed. So if basically what the Rebbe was saying is that if you instruct that your body should be cremated, you're not just burning, you're not just destroying a dead body, you're really destroying a still living body, a body that still has life to it, because although maybe some of its soul has ascended, there are still layers of the soul that remain even after death, for quite a while after death, in fact. And what I want to point out is that all of these ideas that I've shared when it comes to the relationship of the body and the soul, these are obviously intangibles. These are obviously, you know, just, you know, we, you know, these are, you can't verify these by just looking at, you know, empirically verify any of these types of ideas. These are ideas that have, you know, existed as part of Jewish understanding in the Jewish faith for thousands and thousands of years, no different than the rest of the Torah, that tell us a lot about the spiritual worlds, you know, that are not readily apparent when we just look, you know, with our very own eyes. Sometimes it seems a little bit unbelievable. Sometimes it really does resonate. And the point here really is that, you know, if we do have a soul, and this exists, this type of relationship does exist between the body and the soul, then is this a risk that we're willing to take when it comes to cremation? And unless we're 100% confident that the soul doesn't exist, and unless we're 100% confident that there's no relationship between the body and the soul, then to, you know, take an even 1% chance of causing this type of pain and this type of feeling of violation to the very essence of who we are, would seem to be a risk that's not really worth taking. So that would perhaps be a way to put it in a little bit more concrete terms. The next idea when it comes to cremation, which we'll focus on for a couple of minutes, is the idea of the resurrection of the dead. One of the most foundational beliefs in Judaism, and the reason I say it's one of the most foundational beliefs is because the Rambam, Maimonides, has what's known as the 13 Ikarei HaEmuna, which means foundations of our faith. So if an idea made it to that list of 13, you can bet your bottom buck that is a pretty important idea to Judaism. And one of those 13 of Maimonides is the idea of believing in the concept of the resurrection of the dead, that the Messiah is going to come, and that we will, and all of those that have passed away will once again walk this world. Maybe the world will look different. Maybe it will be more of a spiritual type of world, but whatever it is, that we will have a renewed presence in this world. And most would explain that when we talk about the resurrection of the dead, it's not just that our souls will come back to inhabit the world, but rather our bodies as well. And when we go ahead and engage in anything other than burial, so for instance, when we engage in cremation, that's an implied statement of rejection of the concept of the resurrection of the dead. Because what you're basically saying is that this physical body no longer has any sort of value. We can destroy it. We can get rid of it. It served its purpose and now no longer has value. And that would be an implied rejection of the resurrection of the dead, which believes that no, this body still has a lot of life left in it. Maybe not right at this very moment, but there's going to come a time. And to take this one step further, the Jewish tradition tells us, our sages teach us, that one who rejects the concept of the resurrection of the dead will not merit to be resurrected. And whether that means will not merit to be resurrected at all or in their own bodies, whatever that means, it's one of those, you know, are you willing to take these risks types of things? right? You know, if there, unless you're 100% sure that there's no resurrection of the dead, then is this really something that you'd want to risk? So again, that's how I would look at it in a more concrete way, but that certainly is, you know, and then obviously when we talk about the resurrection of the Tichiyat HaMetim in Hebrew, Tichiyat HaMetim, which means the resurrection of the dead, the living again of the dead. You know, there are many different interesting questions that come up, you know, especially as you start to contemplate the idea of Gilgulim, which means reincarnations, according to, you know, that may be part of an important part of Jewish philosophy. Many interesting things come up, but suffice it to say for tonight that that cremation definitely gets in the way of the resurrection of the dead. Okay, so that's that would be the next idea. Now, I do want to point out again, this is very important, and I cannot say this enough, is that anytime we talk about the consequences of someone that has cremated themselves or asked to be cremated and gets cremated, when we talk about the consequences, we're only talking about somebody that knows, you know, about the ramifications and how negatively Judaism looks at cremation and is still willing to do it. But if somebody doesn't know, or if it's forced on somebody, as happened to millions of our brothers and sisters a mere, 80 years ago, obviously those are exceptions, have nothing to do with what we're talking about right now. A couple of other things. And then for those that want to stay on, I'd like to share with you a story, an unbelievable story. A couple of other things that I want to share about cremation before I share the story. And I also see that there's so many questions. I don't want to talk about this next week. I do want to talk about Rosh Hashanah next week. So we'll just cover as much as I can, and please feel free to log off if it's getting too late at night, especially because this is the latest class of the year. So I do want to point out that cremation, Jewish people didn't think about cremation until the last 20 years. Prior to 20 years ago, very, very rare for Jews to think about cremation because it was too close to the Holocaust, right? The memory of the Holocaust was way too close, and very few people would contemplate doing to themselves what the Nazis had done to so many Jews against their will, right? So it's only as the memory of the Holocaust seems to fade, unfortunately, that cremation has become, you know, even a thought in a Jewish person's mind. Another very important idea, and this is something that Rabbi Bulka actually would share with me many, many times. He always said, and you find this in the early commentaries, that burial helps the mourner by providing a sense of closure, right? He would say that all the time. Because when the person mourning sees the coffin being lowered into the earth, right, hears the sound of the earth hitting the coffin, at that moment in time, it hurts terribly, but they also know that death is real at that point. And in fact, Rabbi Bulka had told me that he was told several times by close relatives of those that were cremated that it just seemed as if the people disappeared, as if their loved ones disappeared. There was no real closure for them. So, you know, we've definitely spoken about how Judaism's view on death and mourning has a very, very strong psychological benefits to it. And this may be another one of those ideas that burial provides a sense of closure. Furthermore, what we also do when we bury is we give our loved ones a visitable, a tangible place to come and mourn and remember and commune with our loved ones. When someone's ashes is just spread all over somewhere, you know, as dust in the wind, it becomes much more difficult to come to a place to commune, to feel that connection with a lost loved one. So those are some of the ideas around why burial is so significant in Judaism, beginning from the idea that the Torah says it, the going further to the idea of the body being on loan from our Creator. Furthermore, the idea of the soul and the body, the holiness of the body itself that lasts even after it dies. And then the relationship between the soul and the body and how painful it is for the soul, for the body to go through just this very quick destruction, to the idea that the body remains living, has layers of its soul in it, you know, even far after it dies. To some of these, to the idea of the resurrection of the dead, to this idea of the psychological benefits of burial. This tries to paint a little bit of a picture, a little bit of a mosaic of all of the different ideas behind why Judaism feels so strongly about burial being the only way. So I'm just going to, before I share the story I want to share, I'm going to quickly look through some of the questions. There are many. That's a very good question. The burial right away idea, we could talk about that for quite a while. As I said, right, it does bring a certain sense of closure, which we want to happen sooner than later. So that the next part of the mourning process, right, acceptance, so that the acceptance can happen, then you can go on to the next parts of the mourning process. So there's certainly a lot to that. Maybe a good idea actually would be to check out my podcasts at rabbishare.com. I have one about burial specifically, about the Jewish view on death and mourning. And I do talk a lot about the being buried right away. Pierced ears, great question. Let's save pierced ears to when we talk about speak more focused on the idea of messing with the body that God gave us, and why his pierced ears seem to be completely fine, yet even though we're making a hole in our ears versus a tattoo, which would be completely not fine. We'll definitely talk about that. We'll talk about it when we get to the Torah portion that discusses that 100%. Whole body donation for scientific study. That's a hard one. We've spoken a lot about organ donation. Let's talk more about this next time we go through organ donation. I basically talk about organ donation at least once a year. We'll definitely have a class like that over the next months. For sure. That's a great question. So it's not one of the seven Noahide laws to burial versus cremation, but certainly on the soul level, I have seen no reason to think that the soul of a non-Jew would feel any less pain than the soul of the Jew when it comes to cremation. So that would be my thoughts. Definitely happy to look more into that. Resurrection for Jewish and non-Jewish people. Certainly for both. We'll definitely do a class dedicated to the coming, you know, to the concept of the Mashiach, the Messiah, and resurrection of the dead. We'll talk about what that means for Jews and non-Jews, 100%. But the very simple answer is yes. What will those who are resurrected do at that time? Let's talk more about that when we talk about resurrection, because that is a very important question. And in fact, different very important commentaries say some different things, whether it's going to be a completely spiritual existence, whether there's going to be a physical aspect to that existence, whether it's going to be very different, similar to what it is now. And obviously when any of these commentaries talk about these issues, they're relying on verses that are relatively vague that are found in the works of the prophets and the writings, right? No one knows for sure because no one's experienced the resurrection of the dead. No one's experienced the next world type of thing. So those are all things to keep in mind. We are told that if somebody asks to be cremated, that we ignore their wishes. Listen to the last week's podcast, because I go through that through over there and what the logic behind that is. Okay, so I know I didn't answer many of the questions fully, and that was just because each one of many of those questions are big questions that we'll deal with as their own topic. And now let me just share the story for anyone that would like to stay on. I will not feel bad if you need to leave. I know it's already almost 9:15. But let me just share this story, because when I heard it, I was just thought it was one of those really neat stories. So there's a rabbi in Deal, New Jersey. Deal, New Jersey has a very big Jewish Syrian community. So it's quite an impressive community. And there was a rabbi by the name of Rabbi Amon. And basically he and his family, they would, before Rosh Hashanah, they would always go and visit the cemetery, specifically visiting his mother-in-law's grave. And it was very clear that pre-Rosh Hashanah this year was going to be too hectic, because they were traveling to one of their children's homes, and they weren't going to be able to make it. So a few weeks earlier, before Rosh Hashanah, they were on their way to Brooklyn from Deal. And they passed a sign to Staten Island, which is where the cemetery is. And Rabbi Amon turns to his wife and he says, listen, we have some time right now. We're not going to be able to get to your mother's grave before Rosh Hashanah. Why don't we stop at the funeral right now? Why don't we stop at the cemetery right now? So they go ahead and they stop at the cemetery and they pray and they do what they need to do at the grave. As they're praying at the grave, a hearse stops right behind them. And a small group of people come out. And there's only 9 men. And they come up to Rabbi Amon and they say, would you mind sticking around for the next 15 minutes so that you can be our 10th person, our 10th man, to be able to say Kaddish And he says, of course. So they lower the coffin into the grave and Kaddish is said. And the moment Kaddish is over, the small group begins to leave. And Rabbi Amon realizes that they didn't bury the corpse, right? They didn't bury the coffin. The coffin is completely exposed. It's inside the ground, but it's completely exposed. And he says, wait a minute, you lowered it in, but you didn't bury it yet. And, you know, someone in the group says, yeah, no, we're not going to deal with that. We'll let the tractor do it. It's too messy for us. We're in our nice clothes. There's no problem to let the tractor do it. Rabbi Amon says, no, it's a mitzvah. We have to go ahead and bury it. And they don't really seem to, they seem to think that, you know, what they're doing is appropriate, and they end up leaving. All of a sudden, it dawns on him. He remembers learning back in yeshiva. He went to a yeshiva called Ner Yisrael, Ner Israel in Baltimore, which is one of the largest yeshivas in North America. And he remembers learning very clearly that if a person finds a coffin or a dead body that is inside the ground but is not buried, then you have an obligation to take care of it. You can't just leave it there. You have an absolute, it's an obligation for you to take care of it. So he goes ahead, he finds a shovel, and he starts to dig, and he starts to shovel the earth onto the coffin. And it takes him a very long time because he's doing it all by himself, but he has now filled the entire plot. And right after he fills the entire plot, he sees that there's a marker there to mark this specific grave site so that eventually the tombstone will go there. He takes a look at the name. He kind of just processes the name in the back of his head, and then he leaves. But once he leaves, he's now driving to Brooklyn, to wherever he was going, and he can't stop thinking about it. He can't stop thinking about what just happened. Like, why him? He wasn't supposed to be at a funeral today. He wasn't supposed to be at the cemetery today. If it wasn't for him, this person wouldn't have been buried. He just can't stop thinking about it, that there must have been something going on here. And for the next couple of days, it's all he can think about. Eventually, he calls his rabbi. He calls actually his mentor. And his mentor's name is Rabbi Naftali Neuberger. Naftali Neuberger, in the 1930s or 1940s, was the one of the founders of the yeshiva of Ner Yisrael, of this yeshiva in Baltimore. And he calls him up, he tells him the whole story, and he says, Rabbi, wait, what's going on here? Like, please, did you have anything to tell me, anything to give me clarity as to why this would have happened to me? Rabbi Neuberger at first was like, I don't really know what to say. It seems just pretty like just a nice coincidence. But then he said, okay, do you recall the name of the person that you buried? And he said the name. And literally, Rabbi Amon heard the phone drop out of Rabbi Neuberger's hand when he said the name. And Rabbi Amon, once Rabbi Neuberger collected himself, he got back on the phone And he said, I never told you this, but let me share with you a story. You were 13 years old and you were living in Seattle at the time. And your father wanted you to have a Jewish education. And at that point in time in Seattle, there was nothing. And at that point in time in North America, there were very few yeshivas. So he sent you all the way across the country to Baltimore. It was an extremely expensive endeavor for him. And one day I got a call from your father and he said he lost his job and he would not be able to pay anymore. But that I had to keep his son in yeshiva because he needed a Jewish education. And Rabbi Neuberger recalls thinking to himself that not only is he in the classes, but he's getting remedial tutoring because he came from Seattle without any sort of background like the other boys. But he refused to send Rabbi Amon, back then he was Stephen, to send Stephen back to Seattle. And he racked his brain. And eventually he called somebody that he knew. And he promised the dad that he'll figure it out. And he called somebody that he knew. And he told him the story about Steve and how his father lost his job. And if he goes back to Seattle, he'll have no Jewish education. And he needs all this tutoring. And the man that he called said, I will pay for this young man's tuition and tutoring until he graduates high school. So for the next 4 years. In other words, you today have your Jewish education. You went on to rabbinical school. You raised a Jewish observant family, all because of this one man who paid for your schooling. And Rabbi Neuberger said that this man paid for the schooling on one condition, that he not share his name, that he remain anonymous, because that's how he liked to give his tzedakah, that's how he liked to give charity. But Rabbi Neuberger said, now it's time for me to tell you the name. And he said the name of this person that Rabbi Amon had buried 2 days earlier. He was the one that allowed you to learn the Torah. He was the one that allowed you to learn that law, that if you see a dead body or a coffin that's in the ground but not buried, that you have an obligation to bury it. He gave you those opportunities, and now God gave you the opportunity to say thank you to this benefactor of yours that you didn't know about until today. They talk about how dedicating yourself to dead bodies and taking care of them is a chesed shel emes, a kindness of truth, because the person you do the kindness for will never know about it and will never be able to reciprocate. But every once in a while, perhaps God gives us such opportunities. It's like Yogi Berra said, that you got to make sure to show up to your friend's funeral so that he'll show up to yours. And that's all. I just wanted to share that story. I thought it was pretty neat. Shabbat shalom.